Christian greetings to each one this evening. It's a blessing to again be in God's house, and I enjoyed the day today again, interacting with different ones of you. I trust that all of you felt the Lord's presence today and also had a good day today in your life. I enjoy history, and I had thought about giving just a few thoughts from history this evening. I don't know how much we'll share or from history. Recently been reading some of the early conservative Mennonite conference beginnings, and it was rather interesting to me. Perhaps I'll share just a few brief thoughts from there, and maybe some questions for you to think about along the way. Conservative Mennonite Conference started in, the first sort of talks and meetings began around 1905. The first official meeting of them, if I remember correctly, started in 1910. And one of the men that was involved in the early beginnings of Conservative Mennonite Conference was Michael S. Zayer. And he was a minister in Flint Creek, Michigan. I don't know if anyone's here this evening that's related to him or not. German was their language. They did endeavor to keep that language. The early Conservative Mennonite Conference minutes, if you get them and want to read them, you will need to read German. It was about the time of World War I when they started having them in bilingual, printed bilingually in German and English. The beginnings of the Conservative Mennonite Conference interestingly remind me a lot of some things happening among the Old Order today, and perhaps even the beginnings of the New Order Amish. Some discussions that they had early on were these. Is the Great Commission for us today or not? Was it fulfilled or wasn't it fulfilled? And we might just say, well, no, it wasn't fulfilled, and it is for us today. But it is interesting to look at their discussion and to read their discussions, and if you care to do that, you might get some old Herald of Truth and read what they wrote there and actually see the discussion there. Some interesting things that came into the church, and it is interesting to see how they related to these things and how they responded to these things. One of them was the car. Why did some choose to accept the car, and why did some choose to not accept the car? And what were the arguments and discussions? We can't go into that a long time. How about electricity? Why did some decline electricity, and why did some accept electricity? And how was the question of the unequal yoke involved in that? The radio was another one that came in. And interestingly, I think I even saw some ministers today wearing jeans with rivets. And that was one thing that was discussed early on in the Conservative Mennonite Conference and their beginnings. Hooks and eyes were still required in some suit coats after World War II, up until about the 1950s in the Conservative Mennonite Conference. And that might be interesting to some of you to think about. Is it consistent to preach against the wedding ring when we have some men or even sisters, perhaps, and this might be a little bit dated, but wearing a fairly expensive wristwatch? Can you still defend your stand against the wedding band, the wedding ring, while wearing an expensive wristwatch? And if you say that you can, how can you? If you say you can't, then how can you not? Divorce and remarriage also came in, and these two discussions, along with the discussion of the women's veiling, was largely centered around the argument of relevancy to society and culture today. And a lot of them came in through 1W service and CPS camps, and also came in through the Mennonites' pursuit of education at that time. About the right after World War II, and I should have looked and made sure I know which church this happened in, Now, we think today sometimes we have some real church issues and struggles, and they did too, but ask yourself this question. It was a church in Pennsylvania, and I forget the congregation specifically where this took place. but it comes from the book, Together in the Work of the Lord. And I believe the writer's last name was Yoder. Well, they were having some church problems, especially related to standard issues in the one church there in Pennsylvania. Well, so a couple members from the church wrote letters to the conference moderator, what they would have considered the moderator at that time. And told him about it. The conference, basically, a very long story to make it very short, to put it into a nutshell, which I don't like to do because of the many glossing over of details. However, basically, the conference leadership came in, took the picture Pilgrim Conference doing that here at Cornerstone. Basically, the Pilgrim Conference comes in, takes Brother Ronald and Brother Delbert and Brother Nelson and says, okay, we'll just have you sort of step off aside here a little bit, and we're going to sort of talk to the congregation, and we'll sort of resolve these standard issues between the conference leadership, whatever, and we'll sort of rewrite your standard, and then everybody's sort of happy with this, and then we bring the leadership, Brother Ronald and Nelson and Delbert, back in again and say, okay, now administrate the standard to the way that we have reorganized it for you. And one of the issues at that time was the hooks and eyes, and so they said, okay, we'll just sort of rewrite your standard to say buttons are okay now, the leadership here, you go ahead and administrate now. That's a long story to make it very short. How would you relate to that as a church here, and how would you as a leadership here relate, and would you stay part of the conference, and would you get along okay, and all kinds of other things connected with that? Yes, they didn't just leave the conference. They stayed part of the conference, but just ask yourself, you think it might go a little difficult sometimes. That's an interesting story that actually did happen. I'll give you another interesting story in the conference movement at Fairlawn Mennonite, close there to Ohio, close to where I live. Something happened. They were having a baptismal class. It was the morning for the baptism, and they were having the church service, and the bishop forgot all about it. Now what do you do? He didn't show up. Well, it was time for the baptism. So the congregation and the ministry there sort of decided they'll just go ahead and they'll have the baptism anyway. And they did. And so ask yourself the question, how should you relate to that? Okay, well, we're not here to answer that question. Well, that was a rather interesting situation, probably created some feelings and a variety of other things connected with that. Well, Fairlawn Mennonite somehow quickly decided they're going to be leaving the conference. So they just voted, we're stepping out of Conservative Mennonite Conference because of and therefore. A couple months later, they said, oh, we're sorry, we were a little bit hasty, please let us back in again. And so they were accepted back into the conference. That was a rather interesting little tidbit there of Fairlawn. So that's a bit of church history. They had their struggles, and yes, today they are far and away from where they had been. I'll give you one other little tidbit about the Conservative Mennonite Conference and a specific thing that actually did happen there at the conference, and I could give you the name of the person this comes from, and some of you here would actually know him. He was a minister there at Fairlawn. When Fairlawn was taking the vote whether, now perhaps I think I'll give the example. They were voting that morning on covering strings and straight cut coats. And I can tell you what the vote was. The vote was majority to keep the straight cut and covering strings. Definite majority, yes. They had a minority vote to get rid of the straight cut and the covering strings. And they had a no contest or a neutral vote in the middle. The ministry decided that they can take that neutral vote and interpret it however they please, and applied it to the no side, and stood up the next Sunday and said, lapel coat's okay and covering strings are optional now. I'll leave you to ponder those questions and those thoughts. Were those good decisions? Were they bad decisions? What can we learn from that? What would history tell us? What were the results of that? If you know anything, Brother Ronald here at least would know, I think, where Fairlawn is today. And it's a very interesting stories, and it is good for us to inform ourselves about some of these things and from history as well. Let us look this evening at a subject and something that hopefully can inspire all of you: youth of character. Yes, youth, you have life before you. I would like to challenge you, hopefully to inspire you, hopefully to invigorate you this evening. Put out a few goals there for you to look at in life and also to go after in life. Life will not always be easy, but you can go through life with the Lord, and He can give you strength to face whatever comes to you in life. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Whatever the temptation is, whatever the health problem you have, whatever else you might face in life, God will always be with you if you choose to walk with Him. For our first character that I would like to look at, we are going to go to the book of Esther. And we're going to look at different people throughout the Bible and look at just a few little character things from each one of them. So young people this evening, I would like you to just think a little bit. I'm going to pick on at least just a couple of you, not to single you out, but because I want you as youth to think. So Tyler back there, how old are you? You're 17, okay? Add 10 years to your age, how old will you be? 27, okay? What do you think you'll be doing by that time? You're over halfway there already. Well, if life progresses generally, he probably has some goals in his life. A few of the others of you, just add your names to that. You down here, Cayenne, how old are you? 15, right? 16. 10 years, 26. 20 years, 36. And that would make both of you two young men older than Brother Delbert here. Just a few short years, he was sitting back there where you are. And today he's a married man, has a few children. So it just sure does, it really doesn't take long in life to get from where you are to where I am. It goes really fast. Now I remember sitting in your, at the benches right back here where you are sitting here this evening. I'm thinking, yeah, right. Sure looks like a long time yet, and some of these decisions and the next few years look pretty heavy, and sometimes they are. And sometimes there are some very weighty decisions, that is true. And sometimes the temptations that come to you and came to me were very difficult in life. They were not easy choices, there were not easy choices to make. And some of my former friends did make some choices that were not good, and I chose differently. And some of that was because of desires I had in my heart, and some of that was because my dad simply said, you're not doing that. Okay? And sometimes I thought Dad was being pretty hard on me. But today I look back and I'm rather thankful that Dad was a little bit strict with me so that I was enabled to make some good choices in life. And not only was it my dad, not only was it me, but there were other people in life. And that's the challenge for those of us who are older here in the congregation, is to just simply be a good example. Not really just needing to preach a long sermon to our youth, but actually living and showing them a good example in life. So if hard things come to us as older people in life, be it health problems or financial loss or financial success or any kind of other thing that comes to our life, how do we respond to it? Are we an example that they can say, yeah, you know, someday I would like to be like that? You know, I had men like that I looked up to. I don't know if they ever realized that. But I had men that I looked up to, and I said, you know, I would like to be like that someday. And the simple thing is, the reality is, if I want to end up like that, then I will need to make the same choices in life that they are making and have made if I want to end up with the blessings they have. Something else you need to remember in your youth is simply this. You're planting seeds right now for a harvest in the future. Remember, planting seeds is a little bit like this. There are many different kinds of seeds. I can't go and plant a seed today and expect a harvest tomorrow, unless I'm simply doing sprouts for a salad. That's a couple days, okay? However, and radishes, I plant those, and it's maybe 3 weeks. Around there, within a month's time, I can have some radishes or lettuce or a variety of other things. But an apple tree, you're going to be working a couple years, and you're going to be investing a lot of time and a lot of effort. And an oak tree, you're going to have to wait a pretty long time. And if I would have planted one when I was, let's say, 2 years old, I might harvest a nice big tree once I'm just about ready to pass from the scene. If God would give me time and effort and strength as a man, and I would live to be 90, I might be able to harvest a fair-sized oak tree. So you see, planting seeds in your life, you say, well, why is nothing happening? Well, it takes patience. Don't expect to plant seeds today and have a harvest tomorrow. Whether you're planting good seeds or bad seeds, that's true. And we need to remember that. So youth, the seeds you plant today will bring you a harvest tomorrow. Now God can redeem, and he does say that he redeems the years that were wasted, and that is true. And hopefully today, this evening, I can give an example of a man in whose life that exact thing happened. But it would have been a lot easier for him had he made some different choices in his youth. So youth this evening, make good choices and have a definite goal in life. Don't wait until you're older, because life will be easier. No, I found the challenges I faced in my youth and the choices I made in my youth and the seeds I sowed in my youth have and had an effect of what happened in my life later. It just works that way. So commitment here. In Esther chapter 4, we're going to go to verse 14 there. And at the beginning of this book in my Bible, I wrote this, a book on God's providence, preservation, and protection. And I found it interesting once in studying this book, I noted here that God defeated Haman before Haman even planned or noticed Mordecai. God had Vashti demoted from her office as queen and put Esther in there in preparation to take care of what God knew was coming down the road. This is a book that should give us great confidence in God and in his work in our life. I really like the book of Esther. It shows the interplay between people who are self-indulgent and who want to consume life on themselves and people who want to follow God and be faithful to Him. And you see that between the two of them, and we can watch how God beautifully works out the downfall of Haman in a spectacular story of poetic justice. Verse 15, before we get to chapter 4, verse 15 of chapter 2 shows us the modesty and simplicity of Esther. She was not self-indulgent. She was a person who was very beautiful. She won the beauty contest after all. But in her heart, she had stellar character. It says, and Esther obtained favor in the sight of all them that looked upon her. It didn't go to her head. And notice just before that, she goes to Haggai, the king's chamberlain, and says, you know, what shall I take? What shall I wear? And she just takes in the things that he said, well, I think the king would like this. How about you take that dress? And she followed his advice. I see Esther being a modest person, not a self-indulgent one. Chapter 3, you see someone being promoted so that you can see their downfall. Now let's go to chapter 4, verse 14. Haman and Mordecai and Esther were talking. And notice, even though Esther was queen, she was willing to listen and to follow advice. How do we do when we get an authority? Young people, that's a challenge. If you have a position of authority, wherever it might be, are you willing to listen and to hear other people speaking into your life? Mordecai here says, who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? And Esther then responds in verse 16, I will go in unto the king, which is not according to the law, and if I perish, I perish. She was committed, and I just noted down here, are you committed to the cause of Christ and His people? She was committed to God and to His people and to doing what she could. She didn't know how much she would accomplish. She didn't know, would the king say, well, take her out and have her executed. She didn't know that. She just said, let's prepare. Let's have a time of fasting and prayer, and then I will go and do what I can. Willing to live or die for God's cause. Young people, the church needs young people like you who are willing to give your life, your time, and your effort in serving the church. After all, it's a cause that won't fail. Jesus promised that. The business might fail. Your car will probably rust out in about 10 or 15 years, something like that, more or less. And you have to buy a new one, so why invest $10,000 more in all the accessories adding to the car? Doesn't really add it to its value. It just makes everybody say, wow. Why not put that money into the kingdom of God somewhere? Why not invest there? Are you willing to invest and to commit to the kingdom of God? To knowing and to seeking His will through the Bible. Is that what you are committed to? Do you want God's will for your life? Because after all, young men and young women, God will need more leaders in His church. God will need more workers in His church. God has given you gifts that if you commit yourself to His service, He will use you and bring fulfillment to you in life that nothing else can do. Let's go to Daniel chapter 1, verse 8. A beautiful example here of another young man. Ask yourself, young men, how would you have done? How would you have succeeded or rated? What kind of thoughts did Daniel need to engage in to be able to make the choices and commitments here at the beginning of his life that blessed him until he was an old gray-haired man who wrote the last part of the book of Daniel? Daniel 1, verse 8 says this, and this is a key verse in Daniel's life. Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. The German says setzte, which means to set, and the Romanian says hotărât, which means he decided. And these are, again, action words: to purpose, to set, or to decide. He made these commitments because he saw God is worthy of my commitment. He's a holy God, and his cause is worthy, and I want to be part of it. And so he said, I'm going to commit to that. And since he decided he would commit to that, we see a life of self-control coming from that. A temperate life. Specifically, Daniel disciplined his appetite. Did you ever think about that? And that saved him a lot of grief throughout life. He knew where to draw the lines in his life. He disciplined his appetite, and he said, no, because if I engage in that, it will not be good for me. It will take me down the wrong road. I will get involved in things I shouldn't. So what is some of the king's meat today? Well, that might be an interesting question to answer and to think about. I'll name a few, and maybe you will have other items you would put in there as king's meat this evening. I just simply put down here food. I mean actual food. Now I enjoy a ribeye too, and I enjoy some nice brisket too, but I'm not eating that every day. Okay. And I put down here gluttony too. I don't know if we should have or not, but are those legitimate things for us to actually look at and think about and talk about? I've come to appreciate simple food, to tell you the truth, having lived in Romania for 8 years. They eat a lot of the same things we do here, actually, and they have some health problems too, yes, if you want to talk about all of those things. But I've noticed the simplicity of their food. They don't like Americans' food because it's so, like, are you serious? You like, pancakes and sausage together? That's like, ooh, all that slippery, slimy kind of whatever. That's how it comes across to them. And all the sauces, I just want plain old potatoes, please. Just leave all the other stuff off, you know, some butter and parsley and a bit of salt. That's good. Some good French fries, not the McDonald's ones or whatever, you know. Simple. That's something for us to think about, at least. I've noticed here that probably you don't have, your food is probably a little simpler here than what it is in Holmes County, if we want to just be honest here, okay? And I've appreciated that. I really have. So think about that as you go through life. How much food do we need? Should we discipline ourselves with that? And how should that relate to my diet as a Christian? I remember one man one time telling me this, and I don't know that I entirely agree with him on this, but the things we put in our bodies, he said, if you drink one Coke a day, then please don't come talk to me about not smoking if it's just like a cigarette a day. He said, I think they're about equally harmful to your body. I don't know if I entirely agree with him, but that left me thinking. You know, there is maybe a little bit something to that, maybe on the health side of things, aside from the testimony of things, okay? The testimony of things, whether it's a Coke or a cigarette, is different, and I don't think we can equate the one with the other, but there are health issues with both. Clothes. How many clothes do we need? Can we discipline our need for clothes? How many changes of clothes do I need after all? Ask yourself that question, really. Read history just a bit. 100-150 years ago, they had a lot fewer clothes. Do you know what one of the greatest sources of greenhouse gas is today? All the clothing that's thrown away into the landfills and all the clothing that is produced is one of the greatest sources of greenhouse gases in the world today. and they're concerned about greenhouse gas. Let's get rid of the emissions in the vehicles. Well, how about starting to buy a few less clothes? Just something to think about, okay? I'm not saying that we have a big problem or a little problem. I'm just saying, and I'm not here to make your standard on that, but it's something to think about. After all, what kind of clothes do you need, too? Do they need to all be name brand, or are you good with going to Goodwill? Do they all have to be new, or is Goodwill fine? Is stewardship involved in all of that? Just things to ask ourselves. Young people, you need to think about these things. Well, the cost of living is so high, really. Yes, it is high. How about seeing where I can save just a little bit of money by going to, and maybe just being satisfied with a simple lifestyle of less than the best. Another piece of king's meat today could just simply be the phone and the internet. And I think, young people, you really do need to be thinking about these things and to just really be honest. And you actually need to draw yourself some hard lines on this, okay? Maybe even stricter than what your church does. Really? Yes. Working in Romania, there was a dad over there that he didn't come to church. No. And he didn't profess to be a Christian, but he didn't like some of the stuff that was happening online, and he was glad that I was concerned about his daughter's phone, and he was just wanting to know there's certain stuff she's not doing that's not allowed because of what's online. And so even people in the world that do not profess to be Christians are concerned about things. You say, really, for me, I know how to handle this stuff. Well, do you? I've heard enough stories that leave me questioning whether you do or don't, and even maybe for the adults. We need to think about that too for us as men. Are we the men that we say we are? Are we really actually taking a serious look at the phone and the internet? I understand we have guidelines and guardrails and all of those kinds of things, and that's good, it's right. But how are we responding to it? And I had to wonder too already. I'll just put this in here for you as young men to think about. Oh, maybe sometime your ministry could have a lesson on how, maybe even read the book, I don't know. How did the Conservative Mennonite Conference relate to the radio? What were arguments for or against it? Why did they, you know, and all of those things? And I had to wonder already, how about all these, were concerned that their churches weren't listening to Baptist teaching, and now we're okay with podcasts. I'm not saying that you should be eliminating podcasts or not, but I've wondered, isn't one almost pretty close to the other? And I personally enjoy listening to the sermons I get from Pilgrim's app. There's some really good sermons on there. Yes. Well, do I leave it wide open to anything then? There's a podcast I know that one of my brothers listens to, and I'm like, really? I don't need to listen to the podcast to figure this out. I figured that all out by just taking the Bible and sitting down and studying. Yes, it took a bit of sweat and a little bit of time and a little bit of effort, but I don't need somebody to parrot that to me. There's some college university person talking and they're having all this and that and the discussions and this angle and that angle. And I enjoy information too, but young men, really, where are you getting your information and your source of information? You say, well, the Baptist preacher, he teaches good and all of that. Yes, he does, but there's also Calvinistic teaching there. It's just the way it is. A lot of their teaching and preaching comes from that premise. What are your personal and specific arguments against being saved? Once saved, always saved. Is that true or isn't it true? Are you settled in your own mind? Those are things you really do need to think about. And I'll give you a person that you might find interesting to listen to. And his name is Harry Argo. Maybe you have listened to his teaching already. I don't know. But I have found him to be a sound teacher on this subject. I can't say that I agree with everything he says, but he is someone who has formed and shaped some of my thinking on the way I think about some stuff. And I think he's a solid source and can give you more information about these things and speak from experience than what I can. So that's something that you need to think about and to look at. The way that you use technology really does change you. And it does change the way your brain functions, the way your brain works, and the way that you put thoughts together and the way that your mind actually thinks. It's a proven thing. It actually does work that way. Interesting thing for you to think about. Would you be able as a young man to sit down today, and if you want to read the book, you can, Amusing Ourselves to Death. It's a book written in the 1980s. And I get the example from there. Would you be able this evening to sit down and listen? Now, this is from the world of politics, understand, but as back in the time of the Civil War. To sit down and listen to the Lincoln-Douglas debates. Douglas got up and he spoke for 3 hours. The people went home and ate supper and they came back and Lincoln spoke and rebutted and spoke for another time that long again. Would you have an attention span and be willing and able to discipline yourself to actually do this? I listened to Brother, was a Bergen, I think, works for CLE. And he spends a lot of time reading on a computer screen. And he said he noticed all his reading he does for CLE on the computer screen actually started changing the way that he reads a book. And he discovered it's hard for him to sit down and read a book. He's older than I am, and he said, I don't want to lose that. So he went out and bought himself some books and made himself sit down and disciplined himself to read because this is important. He said, really, is that important? Yes, that's important. Reading does things for you that reading on a screen won't. Johnny Miller, who wrote the book Heart Bridge, I heard him personally say this. There are things he just simply did not catch in his own writing until he had a hard copy printed out and actually sat down and took the time to read through it. It makes a better writer. Things for you to consider and to think about. How about sports? We could put hunting in there. How about entertainment and pleasure seeking? How important is skiing? How important is ice skating? How important is ice fishing? I understand some of this can be recreational. How about volleyball? Do you need it every week or is once a week, once a month? Well, how much is too much? How little is too little? I'm not here to answer that, but those are things you need to think about. No play is no good, but all play is no good either. You need to have a balance, and your ministry needs to give direction and leadership in that. You need to think about it in your own life, too. We have a Bible study with our youth at Zion because one young man years ago had a burden for that as a youth. And he said, hey, we'd like to study the Bible a bit. Can we have a monthly Bible study? So he disciplined his appetites. Virtuous and pure. Let's go to Daniel chapter 39. Genesis chapter 39. Yes, purity, whether it's for us men or for us as women, we need to be pure. And I found it interesting in reading through this, and perhaps we need to think about this. I found it interesting that we often talk to the men, and rightly so, about purity. But notice where the temptation came from here. And so that simply showed me both sides of the house can be impure. We can both contribute to it. We both need to find our God-given places as people that He created. Genesis 39, verse 8. But he refused and said unto his master's wife, Behold, my master wotteth not, doesn't know what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Daniel was a virtuous, pure young man or woman. Daniel was not someone who lived for himself. He was living for others. He was living for the praise of the Lord. He wanted God's name honored. He didn't want Potiphar's wife here to have any reason to think bad about God. And he respected his employer. He said, I can't do this. Sure, it might feel good, but it's wrong. We're not going there. He didn't engage in situational ethics, and he had a pure thought life. And he had forgiven his brothers, selling him into Egypt. Wow, I never suffered a hurt like that. But he forgave them. He didn't turn around and say, now life owes me something. No, he forgave. Joseph didn't look at things he shouldn't. And he didn't spend time thinking or fantasizing about Potiphar's wife. So he had a pure thought life up here. Yes. And this goes for either men or women. It can happen on either side of the house where we spend time fantasizing about each other. And that's wrong. We need to have pure thought lives. Now, you might not think about young men the way young men might think about women. But we both need to have pure minds. You know, is he going to be the Prince Charming someday that comes and sweeps you off your feet? Well, hopefully he doesn't let you drop too hard then. I mean, really? You ever think about it that way? We like to think it won't be that way, but it is that way too often. Yes, it is. Somebody sweeps you off your feet and hopes, ouch, that hurt. But that's what happens when we start thinking about each other in wrong ways. God gave us to each other for companionship. That was the purpose. To fill the needs we have in our lives for companionship. We were not to become objects to each other. Fathers and mothers, you need to talk to your children about purity and how to live a pure life. I mean, after all, fathers and mothers, we tell them, don't steal that $10. I mean, the wallet you found on the sidewalk, you should turn it into the police station. Let's see whose license is there and return it, and we show them how to do that, and we tell them how to do that, and we explain all kinds of things about that. Let's not drop the ball then on purity. It's a little bit the same thing. Let's be honest with our children. Let's talk, you know, on fathers. Let's not just have the one-time talk where we have a big talk. No, it can be an ongoing relationship that actually develops between fathers and mothers and their children. Take time to go out for coffee with them. Well, I don't like coffee. Well, go out for an ice cream cone then or something. Or go hunting together. Go fishing together. Go material shopping together. Go out to the tea house or whatever you might be doing. Find some pastries or, you know. In other words, one person told me one time, eating together is the most social thing you can do with each other. Do you know why? Because if you don't know what to do, you can keep on eating. And I thought, yeah, that's true. I feel a little bit uncomfortable and nervous, and I can sort of, well, maybe I as a dad don't know how to start the conversation. Well, maybe I can keep eating the donut a little bit longer, you know, and make sure, get my thoughts collected or my emotions. Okay, we really do need to do these things. We can't just wait for life to happen and say, oh, I wish I would have, I should have. And don't wait till our children are 20 years old. Children have interesting questions sometimes, and that gives us opportunity as parents to have answers. Maybe it's not appropriate in public all the time. Well, we'll talk about it tomorrow. Okay, then remember tomorrow. So put some responsibility on fathers to talk and find out. Remember the struggles you went through and talk to your sons. Walk with them through this. Mothers, you too. And we can, in this world today, live pure lives. We really can. It's possible. The Holy Spirit is there and the power of God is there, and He can help us to walk through the world today and be pure. And one thing that I thought I would just drop here for us as couples who are married, talk to each other about your own personal struggles and temptations. That can be a tremendous builder in marriages. It really can. You say, really? Yeah, it can. It's the openness and honesty between husbands and wives and the things we struggle with. It's been a great blessing to me and a very great, brought a lot of freedom to me as a husband. And then just being open and honest with my wife. We talk about things, yes. And it's just such a blessing. That's my testimony. Because I have a wonderful married relationship. And you can have that too. It might be a little bit different than what ours is. That's okay, because God made you different. Maybe you will go about it differently. So purity needs to be priority. Humility then. Genesis 41. We're going to look at Joseph further here. Genesis 41, 16 and verse 25. And Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, "It's not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace." Well, then Joseph was not a simple person. He was somebody who had a head on his shoulders. He knew how to be a good manager. He could take care of things. But he said, "It's not in me. It's in God." Young people, the doorway to God's grace is humility. He says he resists the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. You want God's strength in your life. This is one quality you must cultivate. Give God the glory. Give him the honor. Give him the praise. Verse 25, and Joseph said unto Pharaoh, "The dream of Pharaoh is one. God hath showed to Pharaoh what he's about to do." And that's the same attitude Daniel took. In chapter 2 of Daniel. I also recognize that without God and his work in your life, you can do nothing. John 15, verse 5, without me, ye can do nothing. So you find yourself struggling in life, make sure that you're connected to the vine and that his strength is flowing through you. Submissive. This is key, I believe. Submissive. Likewise, ye younger, submit yourselves unto the elder. Yea, all of you be subject one to another, and be clothed with humility. Wear it like your garment. For God resisteth the proud and giveth grace to the humble. Humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. And 1 Peter 2 and Ephesians 5 also talk about submission. And young men, when you go to find a girlfriend, submission can also be on your side, and it also needs to be part of you throughout all of life. Guess what? Getting ordained just gives you more opportunity to submit. Really does. It doesn't put you in a place where now you can sort of do it the way you want it done. No, there's a couple other strong men on the leadership team too. That's one thing I found interesting and discovered in being a church leader is church leaders generally are strong men. And they have strong opinions, and they have strong thoughts, and they know how to present what they think and defend their position. And they should be able to do that. But then to work together, you need to submit. Cultivate that in your life. Don't expect to go through life without being and learning this key. Knowledge of God, and that from a child, 2 Timothy 3:15. And that from a child thou hast known the holy scriptures, which are able to make thee wise unto salvation through faith which is in Christ Jesus. Study, young men, think, read, and pray. Also, seek companionship. Who are your companions? Who do you desire for companionship? Psalm 119, verse 63, David says, I am a companion of all them that fear thee. Are your companions those who fear God? Talk about peer pressure. That'll help a lot. Fear God. That'll bring some good peer pressure into your life. Study the life of Peter. If you want to think about peer pressure, study the life of Peter. And look at what he did and how he related to life before he became a Christian, before the power of the Holy Spirit entered into his life. And then look at what happened in the book of Acts. He realized his own weakness, and it's interesting to me that the first number of chapters in the book of Acts have Peter and John going together. To me, it says that Peter realized, I need somebody to walk with me. With whom do you seek companionship? The frivolous? The sinner? The secular? The saint, the serious, or the spiritual? And I'll let you fill in the blanks. Who do you seek for your personal companionship? Your friends outside of even a dating relationship. What are your personal standards and goals that you have for courtship? And why do you have those standards and goals, really? Ask yourself that question. Why would I have this standard? Just because it's sort of the church expects it? Because I don't want to be embarrassed? Or, any number of other reasons? Or is it because the Bible says so? Are you courting to seek a partner for life or just because for the fun of it? I'm bored and I need something to do. Which way is it? Are you seeking a partner because others are, because you sense God's leading? The one that you're seeking to date, is it because of the status it might bring you? or what? I wonder sometimes. Or is it because you sense God's leading? Are you dating for pleasure or for companionship? Cultivate purity. How are you going to do that? And here's some things for you to just think about, and we'll just run through the list quickly. Hands off. I don't think we should have any touching each other before we're married. God will bless you if you just simply wait. No texting, really. I say, who? Think about it. No texting. Is texting okay? Should you, shouldn't you? And I'm not saying you can or can't. That's just something to think about. How about pictures? Yeah, okay, well, I enjoyed notes from my girlfriend, not the text message. The notes were quite special between the two of us, yes. How about letters? Couples find those to be of treasure later on. Do you have devotions together? Yes, it's interesting to hear what your girlfriend has to say. Yes, it is. How does she think about the Bible? That's interesting. Yes, it is. I enjoy listening to each other pray. When we were dating, kneel down and pray together, that was interesting. Yeah, it really was. It's a blessing in our relationship. And I think it can be for you too. And I have a few various and other things for you to just think about. Do you always need to be in your Sunday best? How about showing up in work clothes? So you're on the way home from work and you need to do something, and I'm not advocating a date in work clothes, okay? But to never work together, hoe the garden together, mow the yard or whatever, paint the house, might be in for a big surprise afterwards, you know, really. How about doing some work projects together? That might be a good idea. Pull weeds in the garden, in the flower bed for a widow at church, or grandpa or grandma. Yes, that could be good. How about visiting other people? Young men, cultivate her family. After all, they're going to be your in-laws, hopefully someday. And it's been a blessing to me to have a good relationship with my in-laws. Yes, once the grandchildren came along, that's a real blessing. They love them, and do I have a good relationship, and I have no worries. They can just go to grandpa's house. Yes, and they love me, and they love the grandchildren, and we just interact together, and it's a wonderful family time the way it should be. So interact with his or her family. Learn to know them. And I would just give a few examples. One example, young men, you are making a relationship now. The word doesn't come right now. Not relationship. Your reputation right now that might come back to bite you a little bit. Okay? Or to bless you, hopefully. And I'll give you, and I know sometimes preachers aren't to use personal examples, but I will use one here that woke me up a little bit one time. My wife and I were dating, and it did a good thing for me. It really did. And I give this too for you as parents, to be courageous. So young men, I was the kind of young man that, well, I had developed my own reputation and different things like that, and I really did have a reputation for something. One time my girlfriend told me, well, who today is my wife, Mom wants to talk to you a little bit. Like, oops, what happened now? Okay. And God gave me the grace to listen humbly and politely and kindly. And she really had an honest concern with me, something I did that was like, and she was just honest with me, if I allow you to marry my daughter, you know, what kind of testimony are you going to be putting on her by the way you're doing certain things? And I was like, yeah, really, it's time for me to, I better think about that. It sort of woke me up, young men. And I'm glad today, it blesses me today even, and it caused me to realize I'm not going to just, they have a price, okay, if we want to put it that way. She's valuable, and they're concerned. She is worth me sitting up and listening. And I thank God I had the grace to do that. And we're happily married today. And I think, parents, if you have concerns, the young man is a nice young man, wonderful, sure. I see no problem with them having a good life together, but he needs to straighten up this one little thing at least a little bit. That does really actually sort of concern us, you know. Be honest with him. Don't wait and sort of sweep it under the carpet if it's really an issue. And then young men, be man enough and humble enough to grow. And that's what it did in my life. And it was a blessing. Now I would give one example. There's two young people, I'll just briefly mention two young people without their names that I had learned to interact with. They're older than me, but I knew them both, and we were both young at one time. They had such a beautiful and stellar character, even if he was not a whole lot for looks. To be really honest, when I saw him the first time, I was maybe thought some thoughts about the way he looked that I shouldn't have. But later on, I found out he has such a beautiful character that is so absolutely wonderful that I didn't even think about it hardly after that. And he also has a sister, a little bit the same way. Character is so beautiful. It doesn't matter. In fact, someone came to me one time and said, this was a man from the community there in Romania, came to me and he said, what's wrong? Why is she not married? Is something wrong with the young men? Can't they see her character? The testimony even went out in the community because the inside was so beautiful. Cultivate that type of character. Now, if you have made wrong choices, I would give an example of a man that has, to me, blessed me so wonderfully. I think I will give his name, and you might know meet his son because he's had attended a pilgrim church. And perhaps even today still is. Georgi Stanchuk is a man that was a quite godless man, a violent man, a man who the police feared, and he basically ran a protection racket in Romania. So if he wanted to do something, have a night out on the town, he'd take a bottle of vodka into the police station. They can have the vodka, and they'll sort of say, oh, they got the message, okay, they sort of turn a blind eye, and him and his buddies can go out in the street, and they can sort of do whatever they well please, looting and robbing and whatever else. Gang from another city comes in. He goes to the police. Hey, you know what? That gang over there, they're coming in here, you know, and they'd go arrest him, put him into jail. Then he'd show up in jail and, hey, yeah, you know, I know the police here, you know, I can get you out of jail, you know, if you, I'll probably take about, you know, X number of thousands of lei, you know, whatever. You get that to me, then, you know, I can help you. So they get the money to him, and of course he'd take his cut and pass the rest on to the police, and this keeps on going. Finally, one man gets, you know, he was like a big wig. People were scared of him. He was a man you just didn't mess with, believe me. People were scared of him. Well, one day, obviously, he gets stuck into jail. And he's in jail. Well, Marvin Miller, who works for Christian Aid, is in charge of Jericho Road Ministries, had been in jail here in the U.S., and we won't get into a lot of story there and all of that. So Marvin Miller is visiting in jail there, and Georgi Stanchuk sees him, and so Marvin starts talking to him. And Georgi tells him, you don't know what it's like being in jail. And Marvin says, yes, I do. And that formed a bond between the two men. And Marvin and Georgi became good friends. Marvin was able to help Georgi become a Christian. And Georgi was about my age, had not done an honest day's work in all his life. Okay? He was a very corrupt man. His marriage is even rather interesting. Because of this, he's a German, comes from German stock, and his wife comes from Gypsy stock. And you really have to understand the culture there to understand what that means. And I hesitated to use the example, but to use, dear brethren, I hope you can understand that I use this in all due charity so that we can understand. That was like a black husband and a white wife getting married in Jim Crow South, okay, after the Civil War. It's just... Okay, you can understand that whole thing there, okay? Now, so through a long time, a long process of these two men working together, Georgi became a Christian. He made the hard choices in life. Now think, 40 years of all of this, 40 years. How are you going to start a job now? How are you going to start a living now? And everybody in the city knows that I'm a ex-gangster. I have tattoos, okay? Well, Marvin and Georgi continued walking together. Georgi continued making the hard choices. And sometimes Marvin had to stand between the church a little bit and Georgi and say, let him go. He'll be okay, and shepherded him all through all of this. And today, Georgi is still a faithful member at the Upper Suchava, and guess what he does? He works for Marvin Miller. And Marvin Miller, one of Georgi's jobs is to make sure that the stuff that they're passing out for Christian aid is actually going to real needs. So the packages they send out, he takes the package. Okay, we go to this address, and this is a story actually happens. He goes to this address over here. Where is this man? I'm supposed to give it to him. Oh, he's over there at the other place. Okay, so he goes to the next address and chases the man down and finds him in a really nice big mansion of a house. This is the last package you're ever getting. And he's one of the best missionaries the Church of Suchava has. He's bringing, I saw it firsthand, he's bringing people in. They go out to sing to people he meets and all kinds of other things. We should almost shut it down. I'll give you one more story about Georgi. Georgi, an interesting man. So we were at Bible school there one day. I was there teaching. We had a couple fellas there. And the administration there was just about ready to say, these couple young men, we should send them home. I mean, they came for the wrong reasons. Well, Marvin gets up the next morning and says, we're going to be doing thus and so for today, and here's the plan for the day and all of this. And we have a special day planned for these three young men sitting back here. And he names them, and he said, they're going to go with Georgi back there for today. And he knew just how to talk to those young men to help them to see the difference and what they need to change in their life. It woke the young men up. And so what am I saying by these examples? Georgi's life would have been a whole lot. I'll give you one other thing. Maria Stanchuk is here. One of Georgi's daughters is married and is a deacon's wife in Romania. To me, it's such a beautiful story of redemption. Georgi's life would have been different if he would have made choices in his youth. He wouldn't have had 40 years of reputation to live down. You say, but he's got a wonderful testimony. That's right, but he had a very, very, very hard road back to God. Alcohol, reputation, knowing how to steal and take advantage of people, it's so easy just like that to stick money in your pocket. Once you're used to it, doesn't take long. And to say no to all of that, I'm going to live the Christian life. There's people in church that wonder about me sometimes, but I'm going to have to keep living the life and get powerfully discouraged sometimes. And then I think about these other young people who made choices and have such a beautiful testimony going out from their life that Jesus makes a difference for young people. And they did not have to do all that reaping. And I look at how easy their life is. And I look at how easy and how hard Georgi's life is and how much easier it's getting now. God can save you wherever you are, and he can help you make the right choices wherever you are. It's never too late to start. But it's a whole lot easier to just simply follow the Lord right from the beginning, rather than sowing to the flesh. For many, many years. And then coming back to Jesus. So young people, I would challenge you tonight. Seek the Lord in your youth, follow him in your youth, and be faithful to him in your youth, and God will bless you. Let's have one verse of invitation hymn this evening. If there are things in your life you would like to change, need to change, must change, and God has spoken to you, maybe even accepting Christ for the first time, stand to your feet where you are. If I recognize you, you may be seated, and we'll meet after the service. What shall the song be?